This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jenny hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is your own Phil Pritchett here. On the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you as we do every week from beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Call me, email me, come record here at Trinidad. Phil@philpritchett.com. 817-733-5256. Come record here at the studio. Well, we are here broadcasting to you, the fan, the in-tune listener out there, the follower of music, the person on the cutting edge, looking for the latest details from the front lines of life and music, the battle that wages on for those of us out there fighting it. I have been out at the front, and now I am back at the news. Broadcasting to you in beautiful high-definition audio, or something quite like it. How you doing, everybody? Phil Pritchett here, thrilled to be with you. Delighted as always. What a show we have for you here today. Oh, man, did you like that Blake Walker stuff? Oh, I just OD'd on sports talk, Cowboys talk, railing about Jerry Jones. The Cowboys are truly America's team. Everyone loves or hates the Cowboys. You know what I'm saying? It's true. Admit it. It's not even. I'm not even meaning that as a big statement, as a huge compliment or anything to be proud of. It's just it's a love-hate deal. You know? What's my opinion on the Kansas City Chiefs? I couldn't tell you. I don't have strong feelings either way. I don't know. Or Phil, love or hate the San Diego Chargers? I don't know. Cowboys, you love them or you hate them. That's how you know it's America's team. That's how you know you're calling them the right thing. Oh, man, they're clawing back to some sort of dignity. They're going to get up to about 3 wins. Outstanding. Outstanding. Thanks for Blake for dropping by. Well, today, folks, even more on the plate for you as my old friend Zach Huckabee, the podcast's own Zach Huckabee. You know and love him. Lamb passes Texas. He made a record up here, made a fantastic record up here all about a year or two ago. Recorded here in the main room, Trinidad World Recording Studios. So Zach is going to be dropping by. He's made a new record. Man, he's delving out there in the Christian rock and roll world. Something I don't know just a whole lot about, quite frankly. Now, in my time in Nashville, I came across many a great Christian artist. It's an industry, man. It's an industry. Everyone's talking about how this, you know, country music. There's no record sales. There's no this. Hey, don't tell that to the Christian industry, man. They support their own. They support the music. They support the shows. Oh, man, there's a lot of groups you've never heard of that are out there playing, Christian summer camps and churches and get-togethers and youth rallies and stuff that are, getting their music out there. Huckabee is out there. He is becoming one quickly. He'll be dropping by a little bit later on. So we look forward to talking with our old friend Zach Huckabee on the show today. And in the vault, man, you know, when Huckabee comes on, he's a big Dylan fan like myself. We got to listen to some Bob Dylan in the vault. So I didn't want to pick one of the obvious ones, one of his earlier deals. You know, Dylan made a lot of Christian records there in the 80s. Slow Train Coming and Saved and all kinds of Christian albums. Went through his Christian phase of making actual Christian music. Very interesting. Well, this is kind of at the tail end of that. This isn't really a Christian song, although you've got some of those elements on it. The great record, Oh Mercy. This is considered a big comeback for Dylan, produced by our old friend Daniel Lanois. You know and love him, producer of The Joshua Tree. Oh, I don't know. You know, So by Peter Gabriel, all those great songs, all those great records we talk about all the time. One of my favorite producers, Daniel Lanois, produces Oh Mercy down in New Orleans back in the 80s. In a house with no air conditioning. It sounds like making a Pritchett record. Oh, good stuff. So we'll talk about Dylan and Lanois in the vault. Listen to Oh Mercy. What's on your mind, Phil? What are you thinking about this week, Phil? Oh, man, you know what? I've just been, forgive me, folks. Forgive me for just kind of wavering off the beaten path at times here. I was talking some sports last week. You know what I'd talk to you about this week that I find very interesting? Of course, you know, I'm reading, writing songs, etc. I'm at the house working hard, keeping it all rolling. I got the kids there. Hence, I do not watch a lot of TV. Do not watch a lot of TV at all, I'm rather proud to say. Unless it's like sports or something like that. So I don't watch anything, really. If something's really good that I hear a lot of good things about, I'll order episodes on Netflix. Been watching Mad Men, you know, enjoying that, kind of catching up on that, enjoying that a bit, on Netflix, stuff like that. So I wait till after the fact. If it gets good reviews and I get a good testament from somebody I trust, then I tend to check it out. But I tell you what, man, I get sucked in every single night with these. Is it the History Channel or Discovery Channel? Dude, survival television. Now, you've got the guy, what's the guy's name? Bear Grisalis or something. We've seen him for a while. The British guy. Just, oh, I'm going to take off my clothes and jump into the creek. You know, the guy trying to survive out there in the, you know, the Siberian ice caps or something. And, you know, there was a little controversy on him a while back. I don't know if you remember. Because I watched that show. You know what I'm talking about? The British guy with the short hair. He's always just peeing on himself, climbing a mountain. And, oh, I haven't eaten in 5 days. My urine is very thick. You know, just all sorts of gross stuff. Surviving in the wilderness. But then he got in trouble because somebody on his staff kind of said, hey, man, he stays in hotel rooms sometimes. You know, he sets up the tent and then breaks down. So I don't know how true it was, but I do remember reading that and thinking, oh, man. But then there's the other guy. Oh, what's his name? He's kind of got the bald head with the camera kind of sticking out on his waist. Shooting. He's all by himself. He doesn't have a crew with him. That's always compelling. But those are, I'm kind of like, eh, you know, I was watching. I watch him with passing interest. But man, these reenactments. I'm a sucker for the reenactment, man. You remember me professing my love for the Def Leppard made for TV movie? Anthony Michael Hall is the great producer, Mutt Lang. Just terrible. But dude, I'm riveted. Riveted. Chad Lowe is John Denver, just snorting cocaine and cutting up a bed with a chainsaw, just in a maniacal drug rage. You know, just all sorts of crazy stuff. This made-for-TV movies where somebody's playing somebody I know. I get a kind of, sick pleasure out of it, watching these biopics kind of with bad wigs, you know, poorly acted in some sense. God, what's another good one like that I saw? Oh, Meatloaf was great. The Meatloaf Story. Those were on VH1 a while back. So I kind of like these reenactment deals. Well, along those lines in the survival television reenactment you've got. Man, have you seen the I Shouldn't Be Alive? I try to stay away from this stuff, but you know, you're just like a helicopter goes down in the mountains. Just, we were literally freezing to death. Just, I'm trying to get in bed or I'm trying to go to sleep. I can't turn it off. I'm like, you know, they go to commercial with the guys just, you know, getting frostbite under a pine tree or some shark circling them in the. Just, I knew that this was it. You know, I gotta see how this guy gets out of this. So it keeps me up at night. Do I sound a little tired, a little groggy, slurring my speech? I haven't had any sleep. I've been up watching this stuff. And then one ends and the next one, you know, begins. Just, on a nice vacation, three friends go fishing off the coast of Mexico when a storm, you know, they're on the island by themselves, starving, you know, no water, no food. You know, just terrible. But man, it's always riveting TV to me. Survival TV. I've kind of gotten into it, you know. Like I say, away from those original guys like Bear, and I've kind of moved on. The reenactments, the real stories. But man, I came across something the other night. You know how you think, man, Phil, when was the last time you cried? When was the last time you really laughed? It's always something we think about sometimes. Kind of like, you know, I'd have to think about it a little bit. I don't know why this got me the other night laughing. I don't know if I was just in a giddy mood or something. I watch Dual Survivor. Have you seen this? The two guys who go out and survive in some, you know, the Amazon or somewhere. One of them's Dave. He's like this old Marine dude with tattoos. He's capable. He's just got a huge knife. Just, my name's Dave. Rather surviving in the Amazon. He's just cutting up trees, you know, just cutting off, just killing a turkey with his bare hands. Well, his partner is this guy. His partner is this guy, Cody. Cody, I looked him up on Wikipedia. Cody London. L-U-N-D-I-N. And what struck me about it, just flipping through, is I'm like, dude, who is this guy? This Cody guy has like long pigtails hair, a bandana, and he's kind of doughy. He's kind of overweight. And I notice he's barefoot, and he's got a stick, and he's kind of lumbering through the woods. He's kind of this hippie guy. And, dude, he looks so out of place as a survivor specialist. And so as he starts talking about himself, he's like, my name is Cody. I am a minimalist. I am a expert in Aboriginal arts of survival. I'm just like, what? He's this minimalist. He keeps saying he's a minimalist. He only goes barefoot. You know, he only uses the basic things to survive. And which I was like, oh, that's cool, you know. And, you know, he can start fire with flint and stuff like that. But, man, the way he says things, something about it got me. He's just kind of this doughy stoner-looking guy. He just doesn't appear as capable as Dave. Maybe because Dave's wearing shoes and using real tools or something. But Cody's just out there in the woods. I guess they say they're trying to show, like, the two different ways to survive, you know. Like, anyone would choose the minimalist way to survive. I mean, yeah, don't give me any tools or shoes. I guess it's if you got in a bad situation. But, man, it was just, oh, it just looked like a bunch of, hell, his made-up credentials, things. And, man, he gets in, like, a canoe in the Amazon, and he looks like he didn't want to get in the water, and he kind of steps on the shore, and he kind of goes, ow, you know, like his foot. I'm just like, this guy does not look like he belongs out here in the Amazon. And he's just like, man, there are flesh-eating piranha in this water that feast on human meat. He just said stuff like that. He goes, this is how the ancient people of this region got around. They were floating via boat. Dude, I was just on the floor with comments like that. A flesh-eating predator, as opposed to a predator that preys upon grass or something. Anyway, and then the kicker of it. So I'm already, everything he says and just his movements, and he's fumbling around and talking about how he's an expert, and then you get some great shots of Dave, the Marine guy, looking at him just with this befuddled look going, I'm trying to support Cody in his methods of minimalism, but man, we got to eat, and we need fire. You know, like he's trying to be supportive, and then Cody's over here rubbing two sticks together, you know, building a lean-to out of a couple leaves or something. And, you know, I was just rolling on the floor. My wife was just like, honey, I'm just like, dude, I mean, I was just doubled over. And then as if it can't get any worse, they get stuck on this island in the Amazon rainforest or something. Cody, the fat stoner guy with his pigtails, he's like, we need a boat, man. And so he goes, in the ancient times, he's just selling this to Dave. Dave's just looking at him like, what the hell are you talking about? He goes, we could hollow out this large tree and build a canoe. And man, we will be floating down the river. And Dave's just going, and then in Dave's own little time, he's going, I'm trying to be supportive of Cody's idea about the canoe. I just don't know how long it'll take. It'll use a lot of energy, and I don't know if it'll work. You know, just, he's very practical. Well, sure enough, Cody builds a fire. He puts coals on top of this tree. You know how you see, like, they burn the tree, and they hollow it out to make a canoe? I'm like, dude, doesn't that take, like, years or something? I don't know if they sped up the photography or something, but dude, sure enough, he tends to this fire for days. They burn this canoe out, but the tree's not that big. I mean, it's not like a redwood or something that, you know, like the Native Americans would use or something. It's a good-sized tree, so they hollow this thing out, and Cody says, tomorrow we launch the watercraft to keep our asses out of the man-eating fish water, or whatever he says. You know, I'm just dying laughing. And dude, then here comes the day they, the boat's sitting here on the ground. It's this canoe, and Cody bends down. You know, he's kind of, you know, and he grabs one end of the canoe. He goes, "Hey Dave, you want to get the other side there?" He's like, "Yeah, Cody, I'll pick up the other side." And dude, the look on Dave's face as they start to pick up this boat, this thing weighs like, it must weigh like a ton. Oh man, I mean, they just, oh, I mean, you just see the purple veins just popping out Dave's head, just going like, holy crap, this thing is heavy as lead. And they just lumber. They're just laboring to get this thing close to the water. I mean, I'm crying. I'm on the ground. I mean, they're just like, and then they're just cutting the interviews of Cody going, "The watercraft had a surprising weight to it." Dude, I'm rolling on the ground. They get this thing in the water, and then they put like half of it in the water, and Dave holds the end of it and goes, "Okay, Cody." And just Cody, all 220 pounds of him, his pigtails and his bare feet, just climbing into this canoe. It's wobbling, you know, like he's going to fall out. He says, "Whoa, hold on to it, man." You know, he walks to the end of this canoe and finally sits down. He barely fits in this thing, and Dave just pushes the canoe out. And this old canoe, I mean, it just goes straight to the bottom of the lake. Just blah, 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 blah. And the music kind of goes, jun, jun, jun. And just Cody just showing he's just the neck up. Just his head is dry. He's just sitting there in the water. And Dave's just looking at him, you know, all befuddled. Oh, man, I was just dying, dude. I mean, just dying. So check that out. Dual Survivor with Cody and Dave. It's worth a great laugh, man. Well, coming up, we got Zach Huckabee. Stay tuned. We're going to get Zach in here. I hear him rapping at my chamber door. Huckabee, next. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, broadcasting to you from beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studio. My studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Thrilled to be with you, folks. Delighted. Delighted. Well, who joins us today? We heard a rapping at my chamber door out there. The podcast's own and P2 Producey, he is here today to discuss his current life, his current times. The great Zach Huckabee is here. Huckabee, how you doing?
I'm good.
How about that intro? Did that do you justice?
That was.
Yeah, I was trying to build it up a little bit.
That was
there.
Real good.
It doesn't need any building up. It is what it is.
It is what it is.
You made a great record here at Trinidad World Recording. What was the title of that?
Was It You?
Was It You, Zach Huckabee? Get it, man. There's great stuff on that album.
It is a good record.
I was telling Zach the other day, we were in the van, that opening track came on, man. I had a great time making that. Zach just stole my heart when he started showing up with like a different vintage guitar every time he'd come back. This is my grandma's Gretsch. I'm like, dude, where'd you get that? A different amp? And then like, yeah, man, we got this, and I brought this. So every time Zach was coming in to do some overdubs, I was always excited to see what you showed up with as a guitar guy.
I got some more stuff next time we do.
You got more gear? You have some recent stuff? Like what?
I have a.
I'm anxious.
I have a 59 silver tone.
Oh yeah,
it's sweet, man. Lipstick pickup.
Oh yeah.
Let's see. What else? What else do I have?
Where'd you get that?
My grandma.
Yeah.
Just
your grandma's just got a vault of vintage gear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of course, she was a player, right? Or someone in her family?
Yeah, she did, and her family played, and like I've got a 1929 National Dobro.
Uh-huh.
From her, and I got a Martin. She gave me this old jumbo, like a Gibson jumbo copy Alvarez.
Yeah, yeah.
Like from, it's a 71.
Right.
And Man, just a bunch of stuff. I've got my 68 dual Showman with the 412 cab.
That's right.
It's sweet. And then my 71 twin.
There you go, man.
Gotta love the gear.
Just rock it. I know. That's what keeps us all going.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of gear, you threw down the gauntlet when you walked in and announced to Phil Pritchett. And let me tell you, if you heard this show, you know this is a big statement. Huckabee goes, man, I didn't want to call and tell you because I knew what you'd say. I go, what? He goes, I bought a bus. Yeah. Oh, did you hear that? Kurt South in Virginia just hit the floor.
I know.
Just hit the floor. Kurt South is rolling in his grave where he did in Virginia, buried with full Confederate military honors up there. Sorry, yeah. South. Huckabee has bought a bus. You really did buy a bus.
Yeah.
This is big news. How'd that come about?
Yeah. Well, I just had a friend of mine. He called me up, and he's in the bus business.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he has a bus and traded buses for a long time. And he loves music, and he likes me a lot. And he said, I was looking around on the internet. I found you a bus. And I was
the
like, well,
perfect bus.
And I was like, well, man, I really would love to have one.
Yeah.
But I don't really have a lot of money. He was like, oh, no, trust me, this one.
Yeah,
this one's
man.
Really good. You can get it. It's good price.
And what year was the bus, you say?
1977. MCI.
Yeah.
Belonged to no other than Joe Stampley.
Ah.
And I went, my dad and I, I bought the bus and we drove up to Nashville. To pick
was
it up.
Was it at some dude's house or?
No, it was at this bus lot.
Oh.
It was at a coach like lot. Right.
Staley Custom Coach?
No, it was Eagle's Nest.
Eagle's Nest, okay.
Yeah, it's a, yeah. And anyway, we got up there and Joe Stampley had owned the bus from 1977 until I bought the bus from him. And
non-smoking?
Non-smoking.
Oh, really?
Non-smoking.
That was a joke. Yeah. No, but it really is not.
Yeah.
Come on, it was smoking at one point, I'm sure.
It didn't smell at all.
No, it was.
No, because I walked in and there's a big sign on the left-hand side of the bus.
Uses flex fuel.
No smoking. Flex fuel?
Yeah, no.
No.
It's not a hybrid?
No, straight diesel. Straight black smoker.
Black smoker, but, 6 miles of the gallon.
Yeah, 6 miles
love
of the gallon.
Love it.
But who showed up at the bus lot? Joe Stampley, to hand me the keys and clean out the bus.
There you go. Wow, that's very,
yeah,
very cool.
Signed my records and everything.
Swept some of the McDonald's Happy Meal wrappers out from under the seats and just, I'll get a couple more things out of here.
No, oddly enough, he had home videos in there.
Okay.
And I was like, well, that'd be cool if he forgot those. We could just watch Joe Stampley's home videos.
Yeah.
And
that disappoints some of your bandmates, probably.
Probably.
You know, have some rock concerts or other ghastly things. And,
yeah.
Hey, man, it's this guy's home movies. What? Come on. Oh, that's great, man. So you bought a bus.
Yeah.
So you've been out there playing shows, booking your own deal.
Yep.
Boy, I sent you up there to Effingham, Illinois.
Yeah.
Our favorite. How you doing, Effingham, out there?
I love
Phil
it.
Phil here. Huckabee went up and played with Jason Bolin back at Porch Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Had a good time. You're at the fairgrounds, right?
Yeah.
When was that? Last, that was in
it was May.
May.
May. May 22nd.
I was supposed to go, but I had a baby due.
Yeah.
So I was here for that.
How's that working
stuck
out
around
for you?
Well, I haven't slept since. Well, last week I mentioned that, you know, we got that baby's, you know, do the math, 6-7 months old. Gosh, you know, and he's doing good, you know, but he gets up like 6 in the morning, in the morning. Yeah, it's not too bad. Get brick walled with the time change.
Oh, yeah.
Baby doesn't get so now it's just getting up at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
That's all that means, you know.
Yeah.
So, man, I've just been walking around. Look at me. I'm still drinking coffee. It's the middle of the day here.
I know. It's all right. Me too.
How long have you been drinking coffee? Did you just start?
Have
you always have been?
No. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I just,
but, like, high school, do you all the way back then drinking coffee or not till, like?
Not really.
Yeah.
It was more college.
Okay.
You know? And it was more like when I had to actually get up in the morning and do stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, I should probably start drinking coffee, so everybody else does, so.
Man, I saw Russell Crowe, the great actor, on Letterman a few nights ago, a little while back, and he was like, well, you know, I've been trying to quit smoking, Dave. He's like, oh, yeah, how long have you been smoking? He's like, since I was 10. Since you were 10? He just goes, oh, yeah, you're just like 3 packs a day since he was 10. And now I don't know how old Russell Crowe is, mid-40s maybe.
Wow.
That's a long time. He says it's been tough on him, so. Golly, those bad habits are hard to break.
Oh, man.
Hard to break, man. So how's it been going out there, booking your own shows?
Yeah, it's going good. I made a scene change. as
a shift. Yes, a shift. Of course. Gone into the more Christian market.
Yeah.
Now this intrigues me a lot. I spent a lot of time in Nashville. So many guys I know that was their gig. Mm-hmm. In fact, like you're saying, that there's still like a quote unquote, there's a market for that music.
There's a huge market for that music.
There is. And a lot of the labels up there, people I know that are well employed in Nashville, that's the side of the business they're on. They're attorneys and they're touring with bands that play, that are in the Christian, popular music market.
Yeah.
So you have now walked into that thing with both feet, or jumped into it.
Yeah,
I bought a bus.
Yeah,
how's that been, man?
Well, I bought the bus back in March, and I decided at the 1st of February that this is what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But it took me until the end of September to phase completely out of the bars,
right?
Because really, I mean, it's kind of hard to do both. Like if you're going to be in the Christian music industry,
right,
and do bars too, until maybe later on. Anyway, so I did my last gig at Woody's here in Fort Worth.
Woody's Tavern, yes.
My last bar gig was last September. And so just playing Christian music, I finished up my Christian record, mm-hmm, recorded it on my Pro Tools rig at the house.
Yeah, did it at the house, yeah.
And yeah, man.
It sounded great. You sent me, I've only heard a few, the tracks you sent me. Is it officially released yet? Is it out there?
Yeah, it's on iTunes.
Yeah, okay.
I don't have any physical copies of it,
right,
but you can download it on iTunes. It's called The Beginning, and so you can just kind of search that
under your name,
under
Zach Huckabee. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And I also recorded on September 11th a live record in San Marcos, one of my last bar gigs, and that's 13 tracks of just songs from the new record, The Beginning.
Where'd y'all play down there?
At Jack's Roadhouse. Kind of small dive bar out on Hunter Road. And a really cool place for us. It's been really good to us for the last several years. And so we wanted to do a live record there. It's a good fan base and stuff. So that is also on iTunes. And it's under Zach Huckabee Band. It's called The Morning Will Be Brighter.
I see. The Morning Will Be Brighter. There you go, man.
So that's
so you play now exclusively festivals, churches, mm-hmm, youth group, revival. I mean, that's all the gigs.
I mean, I'll do private stuff here and there. I do weddings still.
Yeah.
As for mainly, it's just, we play churches, we play youth events and tent revivals and.
What about the thought that you ought to go to the bars, man, and preach to the people who need it? You know. Too hard. Let them all burn in hell.
No.
Some people have said that. They're always like, "Well, heck, why don't you go out there?" I don't know. I'm just.
No, I understand.
That out there,
I had a huge life change that accompanied this. I tried to do that for a long time, but man, I was standing outside the bars, and it's nothing against the bars, the people that went, but I was standing outside the bars getting ready to play when that should be like the pinnacle, like when you're ready. And I was just ready for the night to be over.
It was hard to go in.
It was like, I got it, because. When you stop drinking, and you stop, smoking cigarettes or doing whatever, mm-hmm, it's kind of hard to like walk into a place. People are expecting you because they knew the
old
what I was doing. And so they're like constantly throwing drinks in your face. And
well, that's
like,
part of the show is being on stage.
Exactly.
You're raising your drink and jumping around and,
And Being drunk
is part of the gig sometimes.
And I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Your
heart wasn't in it.
Right. And so, that's what I did. And I think later on, once I get a little bit stronger, just in my, self-control.
Yeah,
I might be able to. Once people know that, hey, that's not me.
That's not his
deal. Music
is what I
do. So.
Well, your guy Bob Dylan did the same thing, man.
Yeah, man. I was listening to Saved on the web.
Yeah, Dylan, of course, was, he is what everybody knows he is. But, made how many Christian records did he make?
He did, I think, three or four.
Yeah, three or four. He did Saved. He did Slow Train Coming. Was that the first one?
No, Saved was the first one.
Okay, yeah.
And then Slow Train Coming.
With
and then,
Jerry Wexler.
Yeah.
And produced that. And
then he did a couple more with Mark Knopfler.
Yeah.
Mark Knopfler did the guitar work on it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I was, just listening to Saved today. And me and you are both huge Bob Dylan fans. But,
sure.
I don't know, man. It's been a really great change for me. I don't knock the other thing at all. I think that I have brought that subject up in bars before, and people have changed their life, which is really cool. But I don't know. It's just.
What have been some of the more the better type shows that you played recently?
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, recently we just I'm playing with this other band, a Christian band called One Less Stone,
uh-huh.
and it's a Christian rock band, and so I'm playing with them, and I do my own stuff. Well, we did a tent revival. It was in Spring Branch, Texas this past weekend.
Right.
And we did it was just great because it's just like full out rock and roll and it's, you know.
Now, tent revival, what is that exactly?
Well, it was a 24-hour deal. Mm-hmm. Started at 12 o'clock on Saturday, ended 12 o'clock on Sunday.
And all day, there's all, stuff going on all
stuff
day.
Stuff going on. So we did the 8 o'clock slot, 8 to 10 is what the band
in the morning?
Did. No, at night, evening.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I did a 2 a.m. slot, 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. in the morning, and then I did 8 a.m.
Yeah, wow.
In the morning. And that was just solo acoustic. And then one of the highlights of this deal so far is I got a call from this pastor, and he said, would you come and be a special music for the Methodist Church in Coleman this, you know, Sunday night or whatever? And I said, yeah, sure. And so I don't know the demographics of Coleman, Texas.
Right.
So I was like, he wants me to kind of talk and also sing. So I was like, well, I'll make my set list to 20 to 40 somethings, you know.
Sure.
Great. Well, I get there, I set up, everything's cool. It's acoustic, you know, we're just hanging out. They've baked me a cake.
there you go.
the first guy shows up and he's like 95 years old. And I was like, oh yikes.
Yeah.
And the next bus that comes in was from the nursing home. And I was like, this may not be good, you know?
You just slowly put down the electric guitar. And
it was just acoustic. Yeah.
Okay,
just
acoustic. Well, there you go. There
and,
you go.
And so all these people, a lady 95 years old comes in and like all these elderly people. And I'm like, oh man, maybe I should just like, so I like opened up the hymnal and I was like, what songs do I know? You know, what songs do I know? Like, flipping through them frantically, trying to write down page numbers.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
I was like, you know the what? I'm just gonna do what I was gonna do at the beginning, and I did.
It's all you can do.
Yeah, I did it, and they loved it, man. And
that's great.
It was really cool, man. Because what's great about the scene is the message transcends, you know, from you know kids to you
that's
know
right.
old people.
That's right.
And so I don't know, it works out. That's been one of the
you don't get older, and like, I'm not into that anymore.
Yeah.
that's your deal, you know.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, man, that's fascinating. Gosh, I must admit, I don't know. Like I said, I knew a lot of friends of mine in Nashville who were involved in the scene, you know, mm-hmm. and playing Christian music for a living. Yeah, and it is a different world, man. It's not the fairs and casinos and bars mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. So they were always playing, but man, they always had business, you know.
Yeah.
I was always amazed. Those are the guys who seemed to work the most.
Yeah.
And write the most. Like friends of mine would just say, man, I got this cut and this cut and this cut. And I'm like, I don't know any of those artists. I don't know any songs. Like, oh, it's all Christian stuff. But,
yeah.
You know, it pays. They had publishing deals and songwriting
sure.
deals, and there's a thriving world out there that's full of that.
Well, and you know, when I decided to make the decision, it was more of a lifestyle choice
sure.
than anything. But you know, when I was factoring in the decision, of course, I looked at you know viability, like how can I make this work?
Sure,
you know?
Absolutely.
And I saw that. I saw the potential, you know, just in everything. And
there's an audience.
Yeah, there's an audience.
There's an audience.
One thing that I really like, especially as an artist, and you could appreciate this too, but you know, the thing that sucks the worst about writing songs that you really care about and performing them is like, I don't know, I would say 95% of the places you go, people aren't listening to what you're saying.
Right, they're
you know,
in there
and,
for other reasons.
And right. Exactly. And, you know, really our entire job as musicians is to sell booze, you know?
Yeah, right.
And so...
So when you take that out of it puts a new focus on your art.
Yeah, they're actually
on your craft.
There to listen to what you're saying, and it puts a focus on your heart. It puts a focus on everything that you're trying to do, you know, and accomplish, you know. So
yeah,
I like it a lot.
And you've got a bus.
And I got a bus.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you know, who owns all those buses in Nashville, or all those pastors, preachers, guys, a lot of times.
Yeah.
Church groups, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, who's got this bus? Like, oh man, the Reverend Billy Wayne. Said, what? Who's that? He's like, oh yeah, he's got eight of them. He goes on. They go on trips and
sure.
They were owned by. This would be some old country band,
yeah.
Lone Star's first bus. Or you hear stories like that. But the vast majority were in the Christian market, you know.
Yeah, touring Christian acts.
Acts and you know, all sorts of trips and things like that nature, you know.
Well, I mean,
it's a big industry.
If you think about it, I mean, you know, just, you know, let's say, for instance, Lampasas, you know, we have...
your hometown.
We have three bars.
Right.
We have an Ambets, a VFW, and a little sports bar.
Right.
The Ambets and VFW have music every Friday night.
And probably your crowd of 95-year-olds in
there. Yeah.
You probably go over well.
But in Lampasas, we have 30 churches.
Right, yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, the numbers alone, you know, just the opportunities to go out there and play are just much better. And,
yeah.
And you know.
And people be receptive, you know, to what you're doing.
And you know, we're all out there for the purpose.
Sure.
You know, and that's what we want to do. And of course, musicians are out there to spread their music and stuff like that. But we kind of go out there for a different kind of purpose. Of course, we want to spread our music, but we want to advance our cause. And so, yeah. So, I mean, there's just a lot of different avenues that you can go down.
Absolutely.
And
intriguing, man.
Yeah,
intriguing.
It's cool,
man. I love it. I love it. Well, you certainly seem happy with it. Gosh, you got a bus. You're out there playing for receptive audiences.
Yeah.
I want in, man. I want in. Well, Zach Huckabee has been here. Our old friend, the podcast owner, Zach Huckabee, he was in town. Love that he dropped by for some coffee, a little chat on the podcast, catch up. And his new musical direction in the Christian market, the bus, the whole thing. Thanks for stopping by, man.
Thanks for having me,
and catching us up on all things Zach Huckabee. Well, folks, stay tuned. We're going to walk over to the vault here, blindfolded. I'm just going to grab a record, pull it out, and then we'll talk about it next.
We live in a political world. Love don't have any place. We're living in times where men commit crimes, and crime don't have a face. We live in a political world. Acapella's hanging down. Wedding bells ringing, angels singing, clouds cover up the ground. We live in a political world. Wisdom is thrown into jail. It rots in a cell, misguided as hell, leaving no one to pick up the trail.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios. Enlightening your musical life. Welcome, everybody, to the vault section here. We have wandered over and grabbed a Dylan record in honor of our guest Huckabee. Thank you, Zach, who loves all things Dylan as I do. Well, this comes right on the tail end of his, you know, Christian era where he was releasing Christian music. But then he comes up with Oh Mercy. He teams up with old Daniel Lanois, supposedly Bono. This is in Dylan's book, I think, is where I read this. Bono of U2, you know, they worked with Lanois on The Unforgettable Fire and The Joshua Tree, you know, mid-80s. So he goes to Dylan and takes like a six-pack of Guinness over there, 12-pack of Guinness, and says, you need to work with Lanois. You need to work with him. He's a master of getting what he needs out of you. So Dylan buys into Lanois' deal. Lanois's got this makeshift studio in New Orleans. There's a lot of great stuff about this record in Dylan's Chronicles Volume 1 book that all of you should read several times. Talking about working with Lanois in this old French mansion house kind of deal where Lanois rolled in all of his recording equipment. Daniel Lanois is famous for just setting up shop in weird places. You know, he did that record Teatro. With Willie Nelson at the old movie theater. Where was that? Is that in California somewhere in the desert? So he'll go into an unconventional space with all of his gear and set up shop. Well, that's what he did in the 80s here. And so Dylan comes over, and Lanois had his deal was just kind of, hey, Bob, just bring your songs in. Don't worry about bringing any instruments or anything. If we need some other players, we'll just get some local guys to come in and play. And it's really cool. So Dylan makes this record and writes all these great songs for it. Some of the best stuff he'd written in a while, I think. Like I said, it ended up being a big kind of a comeback record for him. That was Political World we started off with. Well, this is one of my favorites from this album coming up right here. This is Everything is Broken. This sounds like something Dylan could just write anywhere. You know, it's just a classic Dylan. But there's some good lines in here. I love the line, seems like every time you turn around, someone else has just hit the ground. Seems like that sometimes, doesn't it? Everything is broken.
Broken lines, broken strings, broken threads, broken springs, broken idols, broken heads, people sleeping in broken beds. Ain't no use jiving, ain't no use joking.
Bob Dylan with those chimey landwave guitars. You know, landwave said on this record he wanted Dylan to use his live voice. I thought that was kind of interesting. Can't remember where I read that or saw that or something. You know, that some of his recent records he'd just been kind of singing in the studio, just kind of singing real soft. So he kind of wanted him to, everything is broken, kind of howl a little more, howl a little bit. And that's what they did, using some local guys to come in and play drums and bass and things like that. There's a great passage in the book where Dylan talks about Lanois one day, and everybody's just kind of jacking around. Lanois just picks up a acoustic guitar or a dobro or something and just smashes it to smithereens against the wall. And Dylan goes, I got everybody's attention right there. And just some crazy stuff like that. I remember seeing an interview with Lanois just kind of going, there was a, he's very, very peaceful, kind of zen-like guy. They asked him about smashing the guitar during the Dylan sessions. He kind of smiled and goes, yes, there was a time in that session where I felt we were losing focus. And I felt that I needed to refocus our efforts. And that was how I did it. So pretty interesting there, just smashing a guitar. You ever want to get the band's attention? Now, I'm going to keep a couple cheap guitars around here I can just smash. You know, some of these guys get in here recording, they get out of line, start screwing up. Just stand up with a guitar and just smash it against the wall. I don't know if he had to do it. It's on this next track. Most of the time. This is a cool song, man. What Cusack movie was this in? Was this in High Fidelity? Maybe? I can't remember. Most of the time, Dylan.
Most of the time, I'm clear focused all around. Most of the time, I can keep both feet on the ground. I can follow the path, I can read the sign. Stay right with it when the road unwinds. I can handle whatever I stumble upon. I don't even notice the sea gone most of the time. Most of the time, it's well understood. Most of the time, I wouldn't change it if I could. I can make it all match up. I can hold my own. I can deal with the situation right down to the bone. I can survive and I can endure. And I don't even think about her most of the time. Most of the time, my head is on straight. Most of the time, I'm strong enough not to hate. Don't build up illusion till it makes me sick. I ain't afraid of confusion, no matter how thick. I can smile in the face of mankind. Don't even remember what her lips felt like on mine most of the time. Most of the time, she ain't even in my mind. I wouldn't know if I saw her. She's that far behind. Most of the time, I can't even be sure if she was ever with me or if I was ever with her. Most of the time, with content most of the time. I know exactly where it all went. I don't cheat on myself. I don't run and hide. Hide from the feelings that I buried inside. I don't compromise. And I don't pretend. I don't even care if I ever see her again. Most of the time,
Beautiful, man. You know, Daniel Lanois, producer extraordinaire, he's just got a sound, man. He's just got a... You don't go to him to make your record. You go there to make his record, in a matter of speaking. That sword can cut both ways as a producer. I've run into this a little bit in my world. I got a ways that I do things that I think sound good. And so it's tough when somebody shows up with a different idea of that. You don't want to... It's not that what they're doing is wrong. You just try to convince them that what you're doing is what needs to be done. It's a delicate balance producing records. You know, you certainly, they're paying you to make their record. But I don't know. Sometimes you try to. It's kind of a skill to convince someone to, hey man, maybe have you tried this amp over here? Or, you know, do you really need that many pedals or whatever? How many bass drums do you need? You know, that kind of stuff. So. You know, Lanois, he's got his own, just as those atmospherics, man, just reverb, vibrato. There's just so much space. It's just like being in a large room, yet cozy. That's what I get out of it. Well, my favorite one on this track is this one we're going to leave you with. Ring Them Bells. Dude, this could have been written. This could have been in the Bible. This could be in the Psalms, man. Check this out. Ring Them Bells. Thanks for listening, everybody. Phil Pritchett here. Oh, my stomach still hurts from laughing about that survivor guy in the canoe going down in the Amazon. Oh my gosh. Check that out. I don't know. There's other episodes online where they seem like they're doing just fine. So I don't know if I just caught him on a bad night where things weren't going well. Oh, it's the best laugh I've had in a long time. Speaking of wisdom and laughter, Zach Huckabee. Buddy, thanks for coming by. Our thanks to Zach. Good luck out there playing music. Good luck to all of you in this coming week. We'll see you right here next week on the P2 Podcast. Thanks for listening. This is Phil signing off. Much tougher.
Ring them bells, ye heathen, from the city that dreams. Ring them bells from the sanctuaries, across the valleys and streams. For the deep and the wide, and the world's on its side, and time is running backwards, and so is the bride. Ring them bells, St. Peter, where the four winds blow. Ring them bells with an iron hand so the people will know. Oh, it's rush hour now on the wheel and the plow, and the sun is a-going down upon the sacred cow. Ring them bells, sweet Martha, for the poor man's son. Ring them bells so the world will know that God is one. Oh, the shepherd is asleep where the willows weep, and the mountains are filled with lost sheep. Ring them bells for the blind and the deaf. Ring them bells for all of us who are left. Ring them bells for the chosen few, who will judge the many when the game is through. Ring them bells for the time that flies, for the child that cries when her innocence dies. Ring them bells, St. Catherine, from the top of the roof. Ring them from the fortress for the lilies that bloom. For the lines are long and the fighting is strong, and they're breaking down the distance between right and wrong.